Welcome to the Confluence of Ideas from Confluence Investment Management. I'm Phil Adler. It's time to review the latest Confluence Asset Allocation Portfolio Rebalance covering the second quarter of 2024. Our guest is Confluence Asset Allocation Committee Chair Kaisa Stuckey. As a reminder to our listeners, Confluence offers five asset allocation models along the risk spectrum. They are income, income with growth, growth and income, growth, and aggressive growth. These portfolios are managed by a committee chaired by Kaisa that includes professionals from across the firm. Kaisa, before we address some of the specific changes in the models for this quarter, let's focus on the broader Confluence outlook for the second quarter and how this economic outlook may have evolved from the first quarter. First, it's worth noting, I think, that in the first quarter, the committee saw a declining outlook for a recession during the forecast three-year period. And now, the three-year forecast does not call for a recession at all. What has changed to support this increased confidence?
Hi, Phil. Good to talk to you again. You're correct. We expect a healthy economic environment and have a no recession call. Look, the labor markets have remained stronger than expected, which in turn supports consumption, the largest segment of the economy. While there's a bit of slowing in the rate of change in wage growth, the most recent wage number from the Employment Cost Index was still up 4.3% year over year. That's quite a healthy clip. At the same time, we expect inflation to remain higher than pre-pandemic levels. It's really on the back of steady structural changes like deglobalization-driven supply chain reallocations, heightened geopolitical tensions, and aging demographics in the developed world. Perhaps more importantly, we expect inflation volatility to also stay elevated, which can introduce further volatility into risk markets.
Well, Confluence has also consistently been cautious in the expectations for Federal Reserve rate cuts. Now you're saying rate cuts may be pushed out even further than previously expected. Why?
Right. These hotter inflation numbers and strong labor markets are traditionally a recipe for monetary tightening. So while we don't expect tightening, it is likely that the FOMC will take up a wait-and-see approach to easing, keeping a close eye on the CPI and PCE specifically. The structural forces keeping inflation higher are related to deglobalization and demographics, megatrends that are independent of monetary policy, meaning unless the economy or labor market shows significant slowing, the FOMC will have less latitude to ease.
Kaisa, are aggressive rate cuts less likely because this is an election year?
I would say unexpected Fed moves in either direction are less likely in an election year. The Fed is designed to be a party-neutral institution. Look, we could talk about this for hours, this concept alone, but the Fed values its independence from party politics. And conversely, it tries to avoid a perception of political favoritism.
How else might the fact that this is an election year affect your overall outlook?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to observe. You know, given that this important part of the democratic process often involves intense emotions among voters, one might expect the election's outcome to significantly influence market sentiment and performance. Yet, you don't really see that in historical data. Instead, markets have typically shown a tendency to remain flat for the first 30 weeks of an election year, so about into August, and rally into the election thereafter. We're watching political developments closely, but for now, we focus on monetary policy and market fundamentals.
Well, let's turn now to the individual Confluence models. Overall, there seem to be few changes from the first quarter. Is this normal?
You know, Interestingly, when we went through the quarterly process of updating our three-year capital markets assumptions, so that's the forecast total returns, yields, and volatility for our 12 asset classes at the current market conditions, by and large, we found that the portfolios were already positioned in alignment with our expectations for these asset classes. Well, in some cases, our investment thesis had started to materialize, and in some cases, the market fundamentals had changed, which warranted a portfolio readjustment. It's an interesting moment when, after weeks of extensive research, you find that your original positions were already appropriate. But the adaptive nature of our asset allocation philosophy focuses on market cycle-driven portfolio changes. So it makes sense that when our market assumptions remain relatively stable, you would not see extensive adjustments.
Kaisa, I'm struck by the fact that in the growth and aggressive growth models, there is no allocation at all to fixed income, nothing at all in either short-term bonds, intermediate-term bonds, long-term bonds, or speculative-grade bonds. Are bonds becoming less useful as a risk management tool?
Right. These two portfolios are our most risk accepting. And while we can bring in bonds if we really feel that an attractive opportunity presents itself, it is more unusual that we have bonds in these two portfolios. When you move to the other side of the risk spectrum, you will see bonds used for their lower volatility as well as an yield element.
Well, in these models, the growth and aggressive growth models, where exactly can we identify risk management?
Thank you for asking about risk management. This is something we think about a lot. There are several ways in which we manage risk here. First, by investing in low correlation asset classes. For example, within commodities, a gold allocation is included in all our portfolios due to its low correlation to stocks and bonds. Also, historically, gold has acted as a geopolitical hedge. But more recently, for gold, we've seen increased global central bank reserve buying. It's interesting that central bank gold purchases are happening in a strong dollar environment, which leads us to wonder if some of these institutions are seeking an alternative to the US dollar in their reserves. Also, allocating to asset classes with lower valuations is a good risk management tool. Right now, we like small caps and mid caps, as well as international developed equities, all of which are trading at a significant valuation discount to the domestic large caps.
Let's move on to the income with growth and growth and income models. We see here less appetite for mid-cap stocks and a new affection for international developed market stocks. International developed market stocks are also making a new appearance in the income model. First, focusing on mid-caps, is the reduction in mid-caps in the two models we mentioned directly tied to the interest rate environment, or is this a case of taking recent gains off the table?
Yes, you've hit on the major portfolio implication here. We extended our international developed exposure across all the portfolios on attractive valuations while reducing our mid-cap and small-cap stock allocations. Within mid-caps, we saw our investment thesis start to materialize, so we reduced the allocations on changing valuations. And in small-caps, the expected higher Fed funds could mean tighter financing conditions. We still like both the small and mid-cap space, but recognize the underlying changes.
Kaisa, turning our attention back for a moment to income with growth and growth and income models, why is there the increased enthusiasm here for international developed market stocks?
Thank you for bringing that up. It's an important point. As we stand today, international developed equity valuations remain constructive relative to domestic large caps. Most equities in the developed world ETF are large global market leaders that possess competitive advantages. Yet these companies are trading at valuation discounts to domestic large caps. Given these attractive valuations and a higher dividend yield, we have added developed world stocks in the lower risk portfolios. and believe they're risk appropriate today where valuations stand. We maintain a country-specific exposure to Japan as shareholder-friendly reforms continue to take effect, and also as capital flows continue to move into Japan, which in turn could lead to multiple expansion.
There's a clear preference in the income and income with growth models for intermediate term bonds. Why?
Great insight. Intermediate duration looks to be the pivot point as we move from the currently inverted yield curve to a positively sloped but flat curve. The rationale for how and when to use long-term bonds has really changed in this higher inflation environment. And the benefits that a longer duration offers are not currently there.
Kaisa, one more question about this quarter as we wrap up. Confluence always encourages an investor to take the long-term view and be careful to fit his or her strategy to the right risk category. I'm curious, do you think increasingly tense geopolitical realities should change how investors approach risk?
Correct. You know, we've been talking about the thawing of the geopolitical conflicts that were controlled by American hegemony, globalization, and overall economic growth. We believe this opposite move into deglobalization trend has the potential to introduce further volatility. It means that a close eye on the markets and a deep analysis of fundamentals is more important now than ever. Also, increased volatility underlines the importance of diversification for risk control and periodic portfolio rebalancing to reflect changing market circumstances. This is a very big topic, and we love talking about it. But in the interest of time, I'll stop there.
Okay. Thank you, Kaisa. Our listeners can read the detailed Asset Allocation Outlook report and easily view charts supporting the outlook by accessing confluenceinvestment.com. That's confluenceinvestment, one word. You'll find a tab for the Asset Allocation Quarterly on the top right. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice, and this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.